How did you come to be interested in or working on energy issues?
So I've been working on energy issues mainly through my interest in climate change. I'm not really from a sort of energy engineering sort of background. I work for a charity that it's a nature conservation charity, so it its primary aim is to protect wildlife and special natural places for future generations. And climate change is a key threat to that. It's the greatest long-term threat to wildlife and nature around the world. And so climate change is a key priority for that organisation. And I also feel very strongly, you know, it's a very key threat to people as well. And all sorts of different things about, you know, future generations. So we work on energy because that's such a key part of tackling climate change. And we have a particular interest in energy because not only is energy causing climate change, how we use energy, but also the way that we produce energy can also have impacts on the environment and wildlife. I can give some examples. I don't know if there's later questions that it might be a bit more relevant to. So we're interested in both how energy will cause climate change and how we need to tackle that, but also making sure that it's completely environmentally sustainable. So for example, burning trees, biomass for energy production can result in deforestation and cutting down forests, which then has risks for birds and wildlife. So that's something. So there's two main reasons why we're interested in energy.
Okay, cool. So when my mum was growing up in Brazil about 40 years ago, people couldn't take energy for granted, but it seems now that young people do. Mm-hmm. In your opinion, how could we address this?
That's a really good question. I think that, well, one thing, I think programs like projects that like you're working on, I think getting people talking about it is really, really important. At school, I don't remember ever really having much of a conversation about how we use energy, other than in science lessons. But that doesn't really make us think about how we're using it and how we should maybe change how we interact with energy. So I think getting it into schools, maybe on the curriculum, not just in a science lesson, but in kind of, I don't know, citizenship lessons or something like that, or having like just a general conversation around it in schools. And I think another way is, at the moment, the energy system that we have is, the power stations are sort of hidden away from us. We barely ever see them, apart from, you know, if we're driving down a motorway and we see a power station or some wind turbines. And if we bring the way that energy is produced closer to people, so there's a campaign at the moment to get solar panels on top of all schools, which is run by Friends of the Earth, an environmental charity, then people think, oh, okay, so those solar panels are producing the electricity that I use, and maybe that should mean I should switch the light off at this. I mean, do I really need the light on at this time? And it makes it more real to people and can really change people's behaviour and interaction with energy.
So what was the question you asked on the cloud earlier in your photo booth session, and why?
That future generations would ask our generation, did you not realise that the way we use energy had to change, or future generations would suffer from climate change? And the reason why I asked it is because at the moment I don't think we're doing enough, both in this country and across the world, to really change how we use energy and enough to stop the consequences of climate change. So just a couple of weeks ago, there was an announcement that the UK is not on track to meet its renewable energy targets. So we have to produce a certain amount of our energy, 15%, by 2020 under EU law. And we're not on track to do that. And it's not good enough. And if that carries on, then future generations are going to suffer the consequences from climate change, which they haven't done anything to deserve. And they would look back at our generation and say, why didn't you realise what you had to do? Why have you left us with this mess to clear up? And so that's why I asked that question.
So in our bid to gain energy to power our own economy, how can we ensure equality and fairness with the countries that we trade in?
Oh, could you repeat the question?
So in our bid to gain energy to power our own economy, mm-hmm. how can we ensure equality and fairness with the countries that we trade with?
That's a good question. I think that if we produce a lot more of our energy from renewable sources, and the UK does have really good renewable energy resources, we've got plenty of sites where we could put wind turbines. We've got, believe it or not, we could power quite a lot of our energy from solar power as well. And those things mean that you don't have to import energy from other places. So at the moment, we do import gas and oil from other parts of the world. And I think, there's a really good point of that question, which is there's so many parts of the world that we've been burning fossil fuels for over 100 years, and we've benefited from that, and our economy's benefited from that. And it's not really fair to then say to other countries, you can't do that. So if we massively switched our own energy system to renewables, we wouldn't have that competition. But at the same time, those countries could also benefit from, or not just learn from the UK, but they, if we transitioned as a whole, as the globe, over to renewable energy, then they also wouldn't have to do that competing with other nations for energy sources. They could produce their own from renewable energy, and ultimately you'd have a much fairer and long-term, sustainable, secure energy system.
So you mentioned switching from using different types. Do you think that fracking is part of our energy future?
I don't know. I think that we need to. You may well know this, but there's a figure that's been spoken about quite a lot recently in energy climate sort of discussions, which is that if we are to meet our climate change target, so the world as a whole has agreed that all countries are going to act together and not increase climate change by more than 2 degrees. If we stand a chance of doing that, then we have to leave 2/3 of our fossil fuels unburned. They just can't be burnt. That it's not compatible. And fracking is a whole new industry that's going to be set up in this country, which is taking more fossil fuels out of the ground. And we have the solutions, we have the technologies that mean we can make this transition without burning that gas that comes out of the ground. So why are we doing it? We just shouldn't be doing that at all. We need to be putting much more energy and investment into clean technologies. And I also think a lot of people say that gas, it could be this transitionary fuel as we move from fossil fuels over to renewable energy. But no one invests in an industry that's just going to be around for a few years. If loads of businesses pump loads of money into a fracking industry, They want it to be around for quite a long time. They want it to be there to make money. And like I was saying, that's just not compatible with what we've got to do to tackle climate change. So I don't think it is part of the solution, and I think we should be investing money in cleaner solutions instead.
Okay. When we were asking the public questions, one lady asked if wind power really is the solution for the future. What was your opinion on this, even though you did touch on it a little bit?
Yeah. It's not the only solution. I mean, we couldn't have 100% of the UK's energy powered by wind turbines. Two main reasons, I suppose. One is that when we talk about energy, I think people quite often think just about electricity, but energy is electricity, it's heat, and it's transport. And you can't power... Well, it would be very difficult to meet all of those three things from just wind power. Technically, you could have electric vehicles, which are then you could use the power generated from wind turbines to power them. But I'd struggle to see how you could heat our homes using wind power. So we need to be much more holistic, looking at lots of different technologies that can meet those different needs. And also, there is one issue with wind power, which is it is variable. So it's only going to be producing energy as the wind turns the turbines. There are ways that you can store that energy for use at a different time. So it's a bit of an oversimplistic argument to say, you'll only have electricity for a few hours a day. There are ways around it, but the best thing to do is to have a mix of technologies. So wind power, solar power, wave, use our sea, that's got loads of energy in it, wave and tidal power. We can do things around using waste heat from, there's cool things like going on about trying to use the waste heat that's produced by the London Tube and like suck that out and kind of use that for warming people's homes. So we need a kind of whole mix of stuff that's going to help us to enjoy the energy system and the services that it provides. So, yeah.
Earlier you mentioned how that in the future fracking obviously should be reduced to at least 2/3. I'm curious to ask, in your opinion, in the future, how long do you think it will take to completely rid of fracking?
Completely get rid of fracking?
Yeah.
It's a difficult question. I mean, in the UK, we haven't had any fracking since 2011, and it's not a very extensive industry at the moment, largely because environmental campaigners have stood up and said, absolutely not, this is just madness, we shouldn't be doing this. Interestingly, today is the decision when... There's a company that want to start fracking in Lancashire, and it's today they're going to be making the announcement of, so the local council decide whether or not they're going to allow that to happen. So it's quite an interesting turning point today. If it does start to go ahead in the UK, it will be pretty hard, I think, to fight it and to stop it from happening altogether. Once it starts to happen, that industry will need to... It's only profitable if there's quite a lot of it. If you just have one oil well, gas well, then you're not producing a whole lot of gas. If you have lots, which is what a business would want to have, then it's going to be much harder to undo that and then to, as you say, to try to get rid of it altogether. So I think now is a key time that we need to be saying, no, let's not invest in this. Let's think about doing something else. Across the world, I think that's a much harder question. So particularly America has a very large fracking industry. And once people put money into something, they don't really want to lose it.
So, it's hard to get back up. Yeah. I'd like to talk a bit about the politics of energy. Mm-hmm. And so, globally, the current process of getting oil and distributing it creates inequality and poverty in the world. How might sustainable energy affect or maybe improve this?
That's a really good question. So I think the way that sustainable energy could improve that is that there then wouldn't be such a need to buy that oil and to benefit from oil. If you had other ways of meeting the same need with a different source of energy, and particularly with renewable sources of energy, there's not such a business interest, which is where the politics comes in as well. The whole economies are set up on extracting fossil fuels, and particularly oil, and it's created a huge amount of wealth. And we can't necessarily blame countries that have done that, because every country tries to make money off their natural resources. But with renewable energy, there isn't so much direct money to be made, because no one owns the sun, no one owns the wind. You're not constantly selling something, and so your whole economy and business model wouldn't be set up around that one thing. And I think that can help. It can help to remove the politics, not completely, because there's still going to be, you know, renewable energy companies, and as there is money to be made. But it can help to remove those unfair politics, and you can also generate sustainable energy much more cheaply than oil. So solar power is really helping in all sorts of countries as part of their economic development, because you can have a solar panel without and generate energy from that without having to be connected to big complex grid systems, and it's a much cheaper way and easier way to get people who have very limited energy access to have that energy access.
I heard something, I think we all did, that if you think of the Sahara Desert like a Mars bar, and you were to put solar panels like the size of a stamp, mm-hmm. that you could power the whole world, what do you think about that?
That's a pretty cool statistic. I think there's enormous potential for solar power, definitely. The difficulty would be then getting that energy to all the different places in the world. So you'd have to have if you have energy production in one place, you then have to figure out how to get it to all these other places, and you have to have a big complex grid system. So I think it could be part of the answer, particularly you could set up a grid for that in Northern Africa, maybe even parts of Europe as well that we're connected to. But I think probably a better way to do it is to start thinking about decentralized energy production. And like I was saying, with solar power on schools, for instance, like then everyone's energy production is closer to them. You lose less energy by distributing it around the world in these complex grid systems. And it can help to people, like we were talking about earlier, it can help people to relate to it more and then interact with it in a different way. It would also be more secure as an energy system, because if you have all your energy production going on in one place, if that goes wrong, then the whole thing can get messed up. Whereas if we have lots of decentralized energy, people having their own means of production, then it's much more resilient. And also, like we were talking about around removing the politics and the money from energy, then that can go some way to addressing that as well, because everyone owns their energy production then, rather than it being all in one place and one business, perhaps.
So, what policies would you like to see to reduce fuel poverty in the UK?
That's another good question. I think our houses are really badly insulated at the moment. I'm not sure if this is still the case, but at least a couple of years ago, the UK had the worst, the most inefficient housing anywhere in Europe. I think second only to Estonia or something like that. So we think we're this wealthy, economically developed country, but our houses are pretty bad at the moment. And there has been some, there have been some policies over the past few years to get those homes insulated, but we need, there's a campaign called the Energy Bill Revolution, if you know about them, and they're campaigning to make insulating people's homes a national infrastructure priority. So we put a lot of money and investment into that, and not only does that help to tackle fuel poverty, which I think last year caused 9,000 deaths. So again, we think that we're in this developed country where these things aren't an issue, but they really, they remain a really big issue. So not only would it help with that, but it would also help to create jobs. There's another campaign called A Million Climate Jobs that's, if the government decided to really invest in this and make it a priority, then you're actually creating lots of jobs and stimulating economic growth as well. So it's quite a win-win situation.
If you're in power, what would be your energy strategy? I'm really interested in what you're going to answer.
Wow, that's a good question.
Because so far, when you're mentioning how much it takes to actually put solar panels in houses and how expensive all that is, taking that into consideration, I'm just curious, obviously you need to think strategically
yep.
to run a country and to make it energy sustainable, sorry. What would be your energy strategy?
That's such a good question. For a start, I wouldn't be cutting the subsidies that are being provided to renewable energy at the moment, which is what the government just decided to do last week. So it's because they're new industries, renewable energy industries, they do require a level of government support to kind of, you know, to make them profitable, to make them work and make them financially viable. So I think the government has a role in supporting those industries because, like as everything we've been talking about, those industries can help to provide a public good, and which is climate change, but also things like fuel poverty, energy security, all of those things. And that's the role of government, to provide public good. Sorry, I'm getting very passionate here. To its people. To its citizens. So I think that there is a role for government to be supporting those renewable energy industries until they can be profitable themselves. So that's one thing I'd do. And so what we're seeing at the moment is that the government have just withdrawn subsidies or certain subsidies for onshore wind because they think it's unpopular. Some people don't like to see them. But actually, people need to see where their energy comes from. They need to accept that if we're using this amount of energy, we can't have the old system of just fossil fuel power stations hidden away that we never see and we can turn the light on whenever we want and not think about it. I think people need to understand more where our energy comes from, and if you have to see that, then so be it. So that's one thing that I would do. My energy strategy would be to completely phase out fossil fuels by 2050. There was an announcement about a month ago now where the G7 countries decided that they would collectively do this by 2100. But again, that's not in line with the science that tells us what we need to do to tackle climate change, which is to be phasing fossil fuels out as soon as possible, like I was saying, there's two-thirds of fossil fuels that we just can't burn if we're going to meet our climate change targets. And so instead of setting this very distant 2100 goal, which is 85 years, which especially for young people, I mean, we might not even be alive in 2100. Like for governments to put that target so far away, they don't really have to do anything to meet that. They're passing on the problem. So I'd put in a shorter term target of 2050 for all fossil fuels. I would have a shorter target of 2030, which is to get rid of, to decarbonise, so get rid of carbon from our electricity sector completely by 2030, which, again, we have the technology to do, and we know we can do if we really went after it. Massive energy efficiency home insulation programme like we were talking about. And I think the last thing that I'll say is that I think it's interesting at the moment the way that the government is choosing to fund this transition, because it will cost money, like we were saying. And how it's being done at the moment is by adding a little bit extra onto people's bills. And in some ways, it's one way to do it, and it has benefits to it. But in other ways, it's not necessarily fair or progressive for all people, because everyone pays their bills. Some people are much richer than other people, and them paying, you know, a small amount extra on their bills, that's not going to affect them as much as people living in fuel poverty who have to pay another bit as well. So there's arguments both ways, but I think that instead of having that as a little extra amount on your bill, you could put that through general public spending. So people pay taxes, everyone pays taxes, and the government spends that money on things that will provide a public good, like we were saying before, like something that helps people in the long run. And I think it's more progressive and it's fairer to have it that way than having this system where people, rich and poor, are paying the same amount towards that transition.
What year do you think London will become carbon neutral?
Under current policies, I've got no idea. Under current policies, I don't think it would ever become carbon neutral. From what I know, I think realistically, probably 2050 is a good timescale. I mean, there's a lot that has to be done. Like we were saying, electricity, heat, transport. It's a massive challenge, and you can't just do it by snapping your fingers. And we have to be investing in the right technologies that are going to help us to do that. So 2050, I think, would be a good. You know, we'll also be alive at that point as well. So it's a good thing to aim towards.
So, leading on from that, if you're in power question, what sort of legacy would you like to leave future generations around energy?
That's a really good question. I think I'd like to leave them with... So, quite often there's sort of spoken about that there's three main aims in energy, which is sometimes called the energy trilemma. So you want it to be sustainable, you want it to be relatively affordable, and energy secure. So you want people to be able to keep the lights on, that sort of thing, to be able to enjoy the kind of energy services that we use at the moment, which are things like trains as well as turning our lights on and having warm homes, all of those things. So I'd want to leave them a legacy where they could have those things and benefit from all the kind of range of energy uses that we have at the moment. But that needs to be made much more sustainable and meet our climate change targets, and also to be the most affordable that you can possibly make it, and as fair, to fund that in the fairest way, so people, and so future generations haven't made certain people pay more than they can afford to pay. It should be done in the fairest way possible, and so hopefully we'll leave them a world that isn't completely changed by climate change as well, because climate change is a world that's, at the moment, we're on track to increase global temperatures by 4 degrees. We're trying to get it to 2 degrees, but even 2 degrees is going to really start changing our weather. It's going to start changing food production. It's going to start changing water availability, all of those things. And it's just a world that we just don't understand, and it's not going to be a particularly enjoyable world to leave to future generations as well. So we really need to make sure the energy, the way we use energy, isn't leaving future generations with that legacy.
Thank you for your honesty. Are you an optimist or a pessimist about the future of energy?
I'm an optimist.
Could you elaborate on that? I know you have already, you've spoken a few points, let's just summarise it.
Bring it all together.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm an optimist because I think there's loads of people out there who really want to do something about this. I think you're an example. I think I'm an example. And people I meet and talk to about this stuff, there's huge optimism and willingness to try and change things. I'm also part of a group, you might have heard of them, you might not, they're quite a small group called the UK Youth Climate Coalition, the UKYCC. And sorry,
it makes me happy though.
Oh, you should join. It's all about young people who care about climate change and want to do something about it, and also want to tell the people in power that you're leaving this mess to us if you don't sort it out. And it's a really inspiring group to be part of. And so there's loads of people out there who understand what's at stake here and really want to do something about it. And also lots of new technologies are coming up all over the place as well. I mean, 20 years ago, we barely had any wind power in the UK. Now, last year it was 20% of our electricity. And that's amazing. That's a big change. And people are trying to make this change happen. So I'm optimistic that good will triumph, and that particularly this year with the global climate talks in Paris, if you know about them, the UN talks. So this is where countries around the world have said they're going to come together and they're going to make a deal that every country in the world is going to work together and meet this 2-degree target. And I'm optimistic about that as well. There's a lot of politics, and there's a lot that we're up against, but I think that this could be a turning point and a good year.
Thank you so much. That was really good.
Thank you.